So it is my great pleasure to welcome to Many Rivers Books and Tea three poets and their connections for the evening. Two of these poets have been heard by us before. That would be Carl Fredericks and John Miatek. And one is new to the Many Rivers stage, and she is Cynthia Potten. And I'm delighted to welcome them all here for this event, and I will not get in the way of poetry beyond this introduction that I've already given. I'll let them speak for themselves and let the poetry speak for itself. Thank you so much for coming to Many Rivers tonight.
Let's do a sound check first.
So this is a sound check.
You need to speak.
I need to speak, and it works.
Can you hear in the back row?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Okay.
This is because I have a voice with no projection. Well, first I want to thank Many Rivers for having us, and I want to thank Carl and John for including me in this reading. I'm going to start with something called Timelines. We keep seeking the present, forgetting how we slipped it into a briefcase, a lease to be signed at a conference on the promise of tomorrow, a treasure we'll have at the end of all our doings, our comings and goings. The past frames our doors, our windows, our placeless dreams, our sunlit rooms where relics hum their quiet songs. Collections of driftwood and feathers, stones painted by the stars. Each morning, we climb the skeletal stairway, bones worn to shining from choices we've made. And at our feet, poppy buds, lovely oval sea-green eggs, stippled and packed with crinkled wings, quivering to open.
Question on the mountain. Pine stumps burn well here. Just a touch of oily black smoke drifts into the cool night air above treeline. The fire leaps about the circle of granite rocks, wood turning black and then gray under yellow flames, while the heart of the fire glows red among the embers. Am I the same, slowly burning away, while my heart, strong and red, beats deeply in me till my body becomes gray ash and my spirit drifts off.
Impermanence. Where is this shore? What ocean laps gently here as meandering fingers slip in, drawing ever seaward? What is this? Wearing at the edges of my life, asking little, having its slow way with sand and rock until the one I thought I knew shows a softer line. The patient deep sea self knows the time of my days, the stars of my night, and while it watches Earth's long axis carve grand processions among the constellations, it carries this soul in simple love.
Remembering is a turn in the river. In the eddies, the current carries me upstream a while to find that silky pass between uprush and down where the fishes are.
On Dogtooth Peak, have you ever seen Jupiter from the top of a mountain, looking as big as a dime? Just above the horizon, just below Venus. Well, from the same altitude, 10,000 feet, have you observed the Perseid meteor shower, shooting stars so close that they burn as orange and red as embers in a fire? Have you discovered the scarred trunks of the limber pine where lightning has struck during fierce summer thunderstorms? Have you heard the raucous cry of that gray cousin of crows, the Clark's nutcracker, so harsh, a tree line, way up where sky begins?
Winter. The trees are light and lifting. Empty branches rise as children scattered to the wind follow wild goose cries. The trees are light and lifting. Their arms are skyward thrown. Winds of winter coming, they sing a song their own. The trees are light and lifting. They stand so tall and spare. Snow so deep around their feet, they hardly know I'm there. Now I am light and lifting. The ground is far below, among my branches rising, children of the snow.
The language of trees. In the dream, a tree with naked branches forms a massive oval, wider than it is tall, like a solitary oak on a grassy knoll, fully open to the light, humming in from the sun and the stars. But the tree has no roots. It hangs suspended in a cloudy sky. At the base of its trunk, it tapers into the point of a pencil. When I woke, I thought it might mean a writer's destiny. I was writing for a living at the time. But over the years, it became an icon of another tale. How the written word began to uproot us. How we took the vast language of trees and shaved it to a narrow point of human purpose. How this is still happening, even as we speak. I mean, how much of what we have to say and think is derived from what's been written?
Traveling light. Be ready. Sometimes the best journeys are the unexpected ones. One moment you're sitting there, then suddenly the wind is lifting you, mixing you with 100 other leaves in a way you weren't prepared for. Why did this happen? Was it your willingness to go? Perhaps it was the letting go of your possessions and your accolades that rendered you so weightless. What I can tell you is this: when the spirit calls, travel light.
You, I, we seem so much here, paying close attention to shiny snail trails, seagull tracks in wet sand, owl hoots over a moonlit pasture. Where are the signs of our lives? Grass pressed down where we have rested, a row of beans, a late night fire turning to embers. We who see elders in the rocks, spirits in the clouds, omens in the ordinary, we must imagine, hold fast to the world we want, settle for nothing less, yet accept every offering, every silver moon and dropped feather, each harbinger of hope. When we give ourselves, moment by moment, to all things, nothing holds back from the song and the long and lovely dance.
This one requires just a tiny explanation. The title is The Old Ones of Shokan, and Shokan is a place in the Catskill Mountains where northeastern tribes used to converge for ceremonies. A lot of it is now under the Ashokan Reservoir, which is one of the major supplies of New York City water. The old ones of Shokan will find you. They live in the creeks rushing on. They whisper as the sun rains west. Glazing copper leaves that rest like cobbles on mowed slopes of burnished grass. They laugh in stone-walled groves of pine and towering hemlock. Pleased the plowed fields are now forests. They hide in the mountains, where storms crack wild on the peaks, and night's swayed drums make harmonies of hungry blood, its soft-lit chitters and calls, its beak-edged hoots, low whistles. And after you've closed your tent flap, fallen deep into new moon sleep, the cries they left in time's branches will startle your dreams.
This poem came from a dream, and I was kind of surprised that I was able to get the whole dialogue after I woke up. A land without its people is lost. In a dream, a Hopi elder taps a page in a scrapbook he made years ago. On that page, there's photographs as brown and weathered as his face. He looks at me as he speaks, his hand moving with his words. The tree we sang gave our land away, he said, gave our land to those Navajo. Do you mean it was given to the government, grandfather, I asked. No, it was Navajo, he repeats. That treaty gave us peace, but it also took part of us when it gave away our land, and we will never be the same. A younger man, whose hair is still black, understands and nods. The old Hopi looks at me as if what he has said is so simple, as surely I must see it's true. There is no more to tell in that old face. Then the dream shows a map, some place out in the desert. If you travel to this place, you can see for yourself that the land there is shriveled and lost without its people, and that even the river there is ashamed, so it runs underground and hides.
Mm-hmm. Raptor. Sit on a rock at Blind Beach. Watch Red-tailed Hawk hold his station in a ridge-high current. Say the name of your quarry. A small animal curled in your heart knows the pain of being something larger on never-ending wings.
Visiting Dragon Rock. It's spring. The eager air is contagious. Last night's rain skips with snowmelt down the creek. I call to her from a footpath that follows the water. Slow answers drift over the torrent between us. Her lichen eyes follow as I shift my stance. Amazed she's there wherever I place my feet. Sometimes we keep talking like that, over the water. Sometimes, gripping branches for support, finding toeholds in the roots, I climb down the steep bank, slosh over gravel, and hop a few slippery rocks to reach the stone altar beneath her snout. When I get that close, I can only listen. It's then they come, the Holies.
This is a little poem that when we were practicing the other day, I liked Carl's previous poem so much, it kind of was a reaction to that, so it's a new one. If the Great Spirit gave us the eyes and heart of the hawk, then why do we look like this?
You're going to let it go with that, John. Testimony. May we speak as if there were no beginning or end to who we are, what we do. May we listen without anticipating or holding thoughts like fireflies in glass. May our language carry the true longing, hearts in unrestrained communion. mingling seaward in the day's last light. May I sit with you on a western shore, at the end of worlds and words, watching the sun descend, and then a sliver of moon.
Eden. Running downhill, little foot after little foot on stubble grass, avoiding the apple drops, aware of eyes all around, especially the laden trees. She doesn't see the snake, his smooth black scales, his forked red tongue, until he stops directly in front of her and asks, "Why the hurry?" "Because I love to run," she smiles. "But why are you here?" "I'm here every day, child. I live in this garden and keep it safe." "I'll bring you a present then," she says, not moving away, because she likes the snake and wants to know when she might see him again. When the snake slips into the grass, her ears become caverns. Every leaf has a voice, even the fruit on the ground.
Oh, my Holy One. Oh, my Holy One. My midnight candle. My laden honeybee. My hummingbird feather. My fresh autumn weather. My shining, flashing sea. Who could live without you? Certainly not me.
There is nothing but light. Each small blaze carries hope, gives all at the altar of night, just to be included in the dark secret. Each flare ignores the grumbling of shadows, remembers, returns.
I grew up in New England, and Wellfleet is on Cape Cod in Massachusetts. This one's called In the Wellfleet Woods. Rustling through gold October leaves, I trace the old King's Highway through bare trees, knowing those horsemen followed older trails. Hear that blue jay? He knows too. His calls beckon like a promise. As if in a dream, I see mud from snowmelt on my skirt, have a bucket of embers in my hand for the cabin where an infant died of fever. And though it's day, I hear owls calling, so low, so sure, and we, alarmed, confused, fleeing a night attack, our feet wrapped in deerskin, tuned to the pulse of the forest. The white men, with their blasting sticks, they think we move without sound. Their ears are jammed with lies. We move with sound.
Stone woman. Stone woman, whose wrinkles were canyons, felt the coolness where the shadows were lengthening. Sun lowered himself toward the horizon as a breeze began to move across the earth. A cook fire sprang up in the camp of woman who sings, the smoke from which floated into the hills, mixing with the sage. Coyote called out to woman who sings, "What are you cooking in the darkness, sister?" To which there was no reply, so Coyote called again, and the moon rose.
And now this ever-ending day draws down around me. The shaded street is stretching into evening. Sun brushes the tips of tall oaks and is gone. The simple gift of green is everywhere. the persistent beauty of the earth. Its changes move us in and through a larger life. Gazing into the still bright sky, I marvel at the world's slow turn through daylight and darkness, and my own seasons, waking, open, closing to rest. I think of you and the cycles of your own unfolding mystery as we meet on the broad ocean, both rising with the same wave, and wonder, are we traveling together or diverging to foreign shores? Are we quite sure there is a difference? Or is there but one vast sea and one place of rest for your head and for mine? Are our lives really ever more than one? Isn't this all of it right here? Isn't this all we ever, ever have?
In the canyon. All day in the canyon, voices, soft voices. The Buddha of harmony, humming. And because it was April, the trillium wore dark red robes, and the birds trailed bright flags in and out of fluted leaves. When chattering hikers came through, their words fell like coins on a spider web. And so the day passed. As shadows began their eastward shift, the birds finished posting their prayers to the holy. With darkness came the owls, calling who, who, who. And all night, wild ferns bathed in Buddha's cool breath.
Cloud season. It is a season of clouds returning, days of long fog stretching to days of dark cumulus and heavy stratus that hold out the autumn sun. Here near the Pacific, where summer days are mostly clear, I rejoice at the changing weather, celebrate the deep earthy scents, feel the leaves changing inside me. The clouds build up, moving against the mountains. Thunder rumbles and lightning rips through the sky, and the thirsty seeds that have collected all summer grow in the womb of the earth. In March, maybe, come back here. Put your hand on earth's belly and tell me what you find.
Under needled boughs of ripe blackberries, each holds an invitation as if waiting for my eye. And I am in delight. Intoxicated sweetness, one late season berry, restless for my touch, pleads, take me now. As it aches into a thrill of teeth, of tongue caressing, throat claiming. The falls.
There is a simple society living by a river below a waterfall.
Now and then, broken and bruised by a fall to the rocks at the foot of the cascade, a stranger's body washes up on their riverbank.
No one unlucky enough to go over the falls ever reaches their shore alive.
It is customary for the village people to strip the dead strangers of anything of value and throw the bodies back into the river to float on downstream.
Afterward, they sit around the campfire and wonder,
why do the dead come here? What is it they want? Is this place the afterlife? What lies above the falls?
One day, a young man goes exploring. He climbs above the falls and sees a woman in distress in the river. He reaches to save her, slips in, and drowns.
Together they are swept over the brink, and their bodies drift ashore. All the village gathers to marvel at this new omen.
One of their own has come to them, in the manner and in the company of one of the mysterious strangers.
In death, their differences seem small, and in a way, beyond words. All are drawn into unconscious kinship with the known and the unknown. A joint funeral is held.
From then on, it becomes unthinkable to strip the bodies of strangers and return them to the river.
Finding a stranger becomes a privilege.
When a body washes ashore, the family on watch claims and names it as that of a long-lost cousin, mourns the passing, and accords high funerary honors to the person who can be a stranger no more.
One of the personal articles belonging to the newly found relative is given to the family elder, who incorporates it into a necklace of the belongings of others found.
At the autumn moon ceremony, the elders gather to thank the long days and prepare for the long nights.
They lay their necklaces inside a hollow log and bury it, leaving it underground until the spring moon ceremony.
In the spring, they retrieve the necklaces from the earth and hang them in the trees by the river, where the sun allows their shadows to ripple among the fish.
And that was by Carl. Rain Woman. She wakes me at 4 in the morning. But the mad drumming that broke my sleep is more the resistance of corrugated fiberglass than the wild velocity of her downpour. There's 3 of us in this elemental encounter. Me, wrapped in a Mexican blanket. Her, glissading in sheets around the porch. And the roof, running interference. I want to hear her, only her. How she eases silver into velvet moss, how she spatters the duff and pommels dusty leaves. I want to listen with a feathered head tucked under a downy wing, to be warm in my den, cubs asleep, ears attuned as I doze. So I get up and walk into her arms. Just before dawn, she disappears. Now I am a leaf, shedding her shining, a blade of grass sipping imperceptibly beside a phonic stone.
This next poem, I grew up in Michigan, and like so many of the things in our lives, the things that happened early on are things we tend to remember. This was the first job I ever had working on a farm. Stories from the ground. Tom Grant stopped the tractor in the middle of the potato field. "There, see that?" he pointed, hopping off the old gray fork. He stooped to pick up a rock. "Grinding tool," he said, dropping a rounded stone in my hand. "I find these things all the time. You keep it." The tractor lurched forward, disc cutting into the soil, to turn out the potatoes that lay under the old Pottawatomie Trail. "This was a trade route," Tom yelled above the noise of the tractor. "I have a sack of arrowheads in the house." I stood on a hitch behind the big metal seat, holding on to the wide fender in the words Tom spoke. I watched the soil turning behind us, looked for more history to be brought to the surface. As the tractor calmly plowed ahead, I watched for more stories from the old ones, who called out from the ground, "We are still here."
Awakening. One day the sun rose high above my head. I climbed a tree and listened to the clouds go by. Far below, my shadow played with squirrels on the forest floor, while passing winds swayed my lofty perch in the sun. I stayed up there all day, wondering about the world and myself. As the sun slanted low, I climbed down. My shade had grown, and I smiled as we walked home together.
This is another dream that puzzled me for a long time. Seeds from a dream. A basket of pebbles enters Knight's room. It hovers just above eye level, held by invisible hands. A flash of light slips under the door and fastens itself to the baseboard. The pebbles are all alike, slate gray with white speckles, smooth and oval like eggs. I think they've come from the mountains we've ripped open, that they are seeds from the boulders, the vanished cliffs, ground down by the ice in human hearts, smoothed by spring flushes and calm summer currents. The basket is ancient, as perfectly formed as the pebbles. We don't yet know how to plant.
Things I carry. The chestnut Grandpa found, so smooth, so brown, filling my small hand.
All I know is become dust. In the morning, stillness at the edge of being and not. Aroma of skin, rush of memory, heartbeats, and the fierce tangle, two threads circling annihilation, weaving one. All I can hear, your breath hallowing interior passages. All I can feel, the mountain.
At the roadside spring, the rusty pipe is surrounded by ferns and jewelweed. Its perennial water cools my fingers, pools in my cupped hands, skips and slips into the bed of pebbles where I place an empty bottle. Now it's a waterfall course, gushing against glass, overflowing with chuckles and bubbles, into a little stream that runs roadside a bit before ducking into the culvert that carries it to the creek on the other side of the road. I drive home with 5 bottles of song.
Every time I hear that poem, it always makes me want to get a drink. It's so beautiful. Frogs of Autumn. Where did you come from so suddenly to blanket the night with sound? Where are so many of you hiding this moment while the darkness seems so full of you? Where is the mysterious water that released you, which you and the lover you call across the soft blackness will soon fill with the result of your love?
Octopus love, you might think, is all arms, all about wrapping. Maybe you'd be surprised to learn it doesn't, can't last. When the biting and thrashing is over, months later, a cloud of young arises. Faint airs stream among them, swan songs for the elders, who live another month or few, then drift silently, tentacles unwrapped, loose in deep waters.
Driving cross country in October on a back road in Alabama, cotton fields plucked bare, bits of cloud and broken stem clustered in ditches, I heard harmonies of people planted there. songs of a courage they knew, dancing Saturday night away, soaring into Sunday, pouring Africa's trembled heart into America. The highways were shiny scars paved into the plains, hemmed mile after mile with barbed wire barriers to guard. In Iowa, where the meadowlark sings his western song, silver corn stubble marched to a tilled horizon.
This poem, when I was growing up, I did a lot of things with Boy Scouts, and a group of us were lucky enough to go in northern Ontario. We got to go up a river called the Moose River that goes up to the southern part of Hudson Bay. And if you want to see desolation and no people for a long time, that's the good country to go to. But actually, the story's longer than the poem. Canoeing up the Moose River. This river runs north, meets the waters of James Bay. The Cree know this place.
Fighting. 3 hours into eastern dark, a long ray of Pacific sun arcs over the Berkshires, skims the tops of pine, oak, and maple, dives into cool Atlantic waters. Did you see owl flaring golden against dark sky? I saw brilliance cast your shadow into the future. Offer a smoking feather to your reach. Will you invite the burn and black lines across your cheeks, along the tendons of your hands? Will you tie the quill into your hair, give a wild cry, fling yourself aloft?
Letter from Summer's End. I live in a cave on a paved hill near a blue delphinium doorway. Last night, I flew the owls to Athens, whose ancient stones wept because her children begged. When we met on the roof of time after long knowing absence, our smiles grew a promise as lovely as Venus. But she wore a wry necklace. So I wait where longing was born, where I hope the holy waits, where song begins.
This poem I wrote for my friend William Stafford. Words you said. Words you said often come to me at the strangest times, like now, when I think I am empty and I need them the most. It is times like this when the thoughts of a poet or a wise woman or a child pass through this place, ruffling the curtains just slightly, enough so sunlight enters into a dark room just for an instant. Suddenly, dying is not an option. Violence of any kind does not taste so good. In that moment, every flower becomes precious. Expect this to happen sometimes. Some words, a little wind, another chance.
Every day I tilt my head a little to the side, listening for a voice from a dream, long before words, time, memory. Once, when there was nothing, between nothing and everything, I heard my name spoken in the language of stars. Here, wind speaks through trees and water against rock. My name is now and new.
And that's it.
Of course.
what did you mean when you said?
I don't know if I can answer that.
I don't think you question poets, do you?
Only if they're your parents.
Oh. My kids never ask me questions about my poetry.
No, they just question your dictates.
Oh, I don't do that anymore.
More of a comment. I'm a writer and I've been teaching poetry for many years. And I'm noticing from all of your poems that you're speaking to Native people a lot, and you're speaking to nature. And a lot of my poems are like that, and a lot of my students, I work with elementary through high school, and a lot of my students is pretty much all they want to write about anymore.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you just said. All they want to write about is...
I just wanted to say that I think that a lot of what we, what a lot of us can only speak about anymore is the ancestors and nature, and I know a lot of my mm-hmm. students just want to write about that too. And from kindergarten through high school, they just want to understand what that is. And I just wanted to thank you for emphasizing that in all of your poems. Uh-huh. It's really important.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I teach high school, and I would agree with that very much.
Oh yeah.
The kids really do long to see a little more simplicity in life. And
oh boy, do they.
I do not envy them at all.
Yeah.
Growing up in this
stuff.
Yeah.
I know. Some of my elementary school teachers just absolutely forbid their kids to write poems about, you know, whatever, the video games, and they ask, because little kids will want to write about them, mm-hmm. and they just forbid the kids to do that. Huh. So, yeah, I'm really thirsty for all that.
I'll share a little story with you that I was telling Kyle and John earlier, which is that I am a substitute teacher, and yesterday I did a little unit with fourth and fifth graders about the peace pumpkins that I brought them from the Peace Garden in Regal Park. So we made a little altar with the pumpkins, and we had to put a fence up to make. We planted corn, beans, and squash there, and the corn came from Guatemala, the seed, and we had to put a fence around it, and decided to make fence out of streamers of red, black, yellow, and white for the four races. So I explained this to the kids, and I wound up with only having 9 pumpkins, because people took pumpkins from the garden, which was great. We were happy that they were taken. So I suggested that we set up an altar, and they took the pumpkins and they put them in a circle. And then I explained how a Guatemalan woman had done the ceremony for the planting of the corn at the Peace Garden, and how she had burned copal, because burning incense, Latin America, they really believe that the gods like sweet smells, and that's why they burn copal. And then I explain that here in, you know, North America, they often burn sage, and I have a lot of white sage, so I gave everybody a white sage leaf. And then I explained about the fence, and passed out in, you know, red, black, yellow, and white paper, and told them to cut a little shape and to figure out a design to put as a background to the altar. And they wanted to do a spiral. So they took a spiral, and one kid actually made the center of the spiral, and then they just went outward with red, black, and white in the spiral behind the pumpkins, which was so great. And then then they wanted to put their sage leaves. I said, well, why don't you just all put your sage leaves in the center of the circle with the pumpkins? And they arranged that in spiral. So the last part was to write a little poem or a little prayer for peace. And I wish I'd brought it, but I didn't. But everyone wrote 1, 2, or 3 lines, and they said the most wonderful things. And a lot of what they said was, you know, I am the sun and I am shining peace on all the world. Mm-hmm. You know, or I am a tree and I am going to shed my leaves for peace. So it just confirms what you said. Huh. So as a composite, I am going to put all the lines together, and it will be on display in the bulletin board at the Peace Garden in Sebastopol.
So I have a comment and question. I really appreciated the way that you read the poems, and you, I heard a comment that you had actually rehearsed this a few nights before, and I think it worked extremely well the way that you did it.
Taking turns.
But it almost seemed to me as if, in many cases, the poems were responding to previous poems. I mean, I know there's an explicit case of that, of one poem responding to the previous poem. But in many cases, it seemed as if that was that the order was by design almost. And I'm wondering if you gave any thought to that, or was it just a catch-as-catch kind of process?
Well, we did give thought to that, and we didn't have the order set until, well, we basically went over this twice, and we didn't have all of it the first time, but the second time we brought all of it together and kind of on the spot decided, well, what goes with what? So it wasn't totally serendipitous. Yeah. With serendipitous in practice.
Yeah, in the beginning it was serendipitous. Yeah. We just each brought a pile of poems and went, okay, who's going first? And then once somebody went first, we just kind of intuitively would pull a poem out of our pile that talked to that one. Mm-hmm. And then we went, wow, this is pretty cool. Let's throw a few more in there and see what happens. And so we kind of came up with sort of rough themes, but yeah, it was fun to do. It was different.
Very nice.
It was fun.
All of your poetry was different, but it went very well together.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Very nice. Very nice to all of you.
Thank you. I think that's because Carl and John judiciously nixed some of mine.
Whatever it was, it turned out really well.
Oh, thank you. We didn't nix it. We just made a suggestion. We'll just turn our backs on you when you're
reading. No, it's very helpful, actually. I revised one poem, and I like it much better now, which I didn't read tonight. But
it's interesting. If you were here, you could look over our shoulders and see that a lot of these poems are typed and printed out and have last-minute pencil changes. I still go back and fool with things I wrote 40 years ago. And I have a question for you. How did the piece called The Falls work when we read in rounds?
It
did that work?
Well, I just maybe a little bit slow, but sometimes I kind of wanted there to be just a couple seconds between. Sometimes it kind of seemed like it was sagging into just a little bit too quick, because I kind of feel like it's almost like eating food, you know, and listening to the phone.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just me, you know, it's like I'm going to kind of digest this for a few seconds.
That's a good point.
No, we had agreed that we would do that.
Oh, really?
We would leave space,
sometimes,
you know.
Sometimes
but you get
fine.
Up here and
we
you're
fine.
Sort
just
of nervous.
Times.
And
yeah. A couple times I just thought that, but most of the time that
yeah. Thank you.
I'll just make the comment that I actually thought you were doing a Renga at first.
Oh!
A poem composed by multiple authors taking turns responding to each other's lines in sequence.
Well, when we were reading.
That actually was very intriguing.
When we were reading together, we were drinking Tang at the time.
Tang?
Could have been a Renga Tang.
It's a lie. We were drinking wine. That
That was wine?
Oh, God. Really.
What's my
nice,
mother going to say?
A nice white wine that was like a Moselle.
And the poetry kept getting better and better and the more you tried it, right?
At least us.
Yeah. Any other secrets we can tell you?
I think we'd really like to thank you folks too, because and especially Jim and Rob, you guys always have such a wonderful ambiance and atmosphere to this place, and everybody that comes here is kind of magic. I don't know how that works. I don't know how you guys do it, but it's just, it's so wonderful for reading for an audience like this.
And let's not forget Stuart over there behind the e-service counter.
Yes,
yes, the three musketeers.
That's right. Well, thank you for, if there are no more comments or questions, on behalf of Many Rivers, I certainly want to thank you. It was delightful. I hope you'll do it again. And do a render, come on. With wine or without. Or tang or without.
Thank you.
That works for me. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
So, I will just point out, as usual, that we have a donation bowl on the counter there. We encourage you to contribute to it, which we share with our speakers to further their work, maybe to buy a bottle of sake for
next time.
And also to help maintain this space so we can continue to have events like this. And come to our 10th anniversary party.
Yeah.
Thank you.
First 10 years.
Yeah.
That was nice. I'm so glad you could come.
It felt just your heart.
It was so enjoyable. I was really, really tired. All I had to do was follow your image.
Oh, great. Thank you
for
coming.
Thanks.
Thanks
for coming.
Thank you.
I would love to just get together and have some calm to each other.